good evening, fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode 21 of the Johnny and Josh Show. It's the Blackjack episode, and certainly we've got royalty joining us. A quick roll call of the boys. Is everybody here? JC?
Yep.
Dave?
Present.
Eric?
Present, accounted for.
Fantastic. Now, 21's a lucky number for some. You will know, of course, that you become an adult in Singapore, Egypt, and the UAE at the age of 21. The summer and winter solstices take place usually on June the 21st and December the 21st, respectively. So it's a key number, guys. It's an angel number that means it's a time for new beginnings and changes. And yet I've got the same old blinking presenters.
Goldie, you're also in the US. That's when you can start drinking.
Oh, there's something to celebrate.
Big one, yeah.
You would never drink before that. Drinking before that is illegal.
Well, you can go get a beer at the ballpark with your dad.
Notable 21s. Well, three 21s have been retired. Warren Spahn, Roberto Clemente, and Bob Lemon. Roberto Clemente, one of my all-time favorites. What a superstar. But it's also, it's a number that's a bit associated with the era of the steroid, Mr. Sammy Sosa, who I think we could safely say will never get into the Hall of Fame. One who might, Roger Clemens. And apparently the Bo Sox have not allowed any player to play in 21, JC, since he left the club, on the assumption that he was going to be going into the Hall of Fame. Will he be going into the Hall of Fame?
Well, he's right at the edge. It's got to happen now, or he's going to end up on the veterans ballot. I think he should at this point. I think he and Bond should both be going in. But I don't know why, whether he gets in the Hall of Fame or not, should determine whether the Red Sox retire his number. It isn't a determination for other players on other teams necessarily. He made such an impact on that team that either you stand up and say, all those things aside, we think his number should be retired, or you don't. You don't wait for a third party to make that determination.
No, the Hall of Fame, it pushes you over the line, because as long as you're that filthy, once you're in the Hall of Fame, you absolutely have to retire his number.
So well, they're waiting. Like, they don't want him. You're looking for clean hands. It's weak. It's wussy.
Well, let me ask you a question. You're a Red Sox fan. Do you want Roger Clemens? What's your take on Roger Clemens as an all-time Red Sox?
Let me say, and Eric and I have met him, he is not the nicest guy. He's not a guy I like.
You don't say.
But to be honest, during his period when he was with the Red Sox, he was never under the taint of steroids during that period of his career. He was dominant. He was one of the greatest pitchers.
No, that's all. That's all book stuff.
I'm saying,
Josh.
Yes. I mean,
you're fan stuff.
You're asking me whether I think his number should be retired by the Red Sox. I'm going to say yes. I was explaining why. I was giving you context for my answer.
No, I want, you know, because the guy went and played for the Yankees. He went and played for the Yankees, and then he got done for all kinds of.
Wade Boggs went and played for the Yankees. He got his number retired.
And you're okay with that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not that kind of fan. I mean, what they did for the team at the time, that's how you determine whether their value rises to the level of a number retirement.
I'm assuming, Eric, given the fact that he threw a bat at one of your all-time favorite players, Mr. Mike Piazza, that you're not a fan and you don't want his number retired.
But also, he yelled at me. Remember, we were in Houston.
Yeah.
He yelled at me.
What did he yell at you about? He called security on me.
But that's the point I just made.
Gordon. You were filming. Yeah, but hang on, Eric. I was not filming him.
I was not filming.
I was looking at something.
I was looking at something through the viewfinder of the camera. He thought I was.
Why
filming
were you
him.
Filming him, Eric?
Oh, it doesn't.
But again, the bottom line is, I don't like him. He seems like a horrible human being.
Yeah.
But that is not the determination here. What did he contribute on the field? We have this conversation all the time: is how do you determine the greatness of a player? It obviously is not. It should be performance, I think. You know, I mean, should Ty Cobb be kicked out of the Hall of Fame? I don't think so. I mean,
well,
I think
anyways, before we go on, one more thing is Roger Clemens, 21, and Red Sox and Blue Jays, but 22 in Houston and Yankees. Okay, so bear that in mind. Now I've just blew your 22 notables for next episode. But anyways, all will be revealed about why.
Blue Jay Hall of Famer if he ever gets in.
Seven-time Cy Young Awards, over 4,500
Hey, forget it. Either way, he yelled at me and he made me mad. Moving on.
It made you cry.
He heard Eric's feelings.
He called security on me. we'll
I backed you up.
We didn't even get to talk about how Warren Spahn wore 21 for the Mets in 1965. We're just going to forget that?
No, yes. You mentioned
moving
that.
On.
let alone the humanitarian work of Roberto Clemente.
I should have bought more waffles. That as well. I should have bought more waffles. Jeez, we're waffling again.
Okay, COVID update. More cases, Canadian border. What's the story, Eric?
The Canadian border, for the first time, get this, since March 2019, the Detroit Tigers are in Toronto playing against the Blue Jays.
Yay.
This weekend, which just goes to show how pissed off I am with Interleague, you know, and how these schedules askew. Forget about COVID. Why was it March 2019? You had all 2019 for the Tigers to visit their cross-border rivals, if you will.
What's taken so long?
And it's because
a weird schedule.
You know, they don't play in the same division.
They don't play in the same division, but they're the same league. And what that means is that the Blue Jays have to, you know, play.
That's not an interleague thing. That's an alignment thing. You missed.
Interleague screwed everything. Anyways, but the good news is that the Tigers are in. We're in the Toronto this weekend, and a lot of Detroit Tigers fans were allowed to cross the border and see Miguel Cabrera hit home run number 500 today.
Tonight, Sunday.
Correct. He just did Biggie. a few hours ago.
A few hours ago.
So get this as well. All those Tigers fans who crossed the border into Canada to see Miggy hit 500. Miggy only got one hit out of 12 at bats in the entire series, and that was homer number 500.
Oh, yeah. You got two more years of this, by the way.
Hey, guys, how
do Tigers fans feel about that?
But how much do I love Miggy? I was cheering that home run, despite the fact the starter for Toronto, Stephen Matz, I just picked him up. He's in my fantasy lineup tonight. I was still happy with the Miggy.
You are such a great
guy. You know what you are? You're a humanitarian.
I am a humanitarian.
Can we talk about Miggy?
Let's talk about Miggy because he becomes the 28th player to hit 500 home runs. And that's a pretty small club, especially when you consider this whole steroids period. But I think what's most impressive, 311 batting average, that puts him fifth on the list. So of the 28 players, he has the fifth highest batting average. Four batting titles. The only other player with 500 home runs to have four batting titles, Ted Williams. He also won a triple crown, Miggy. And to me, first ballot Hall of Famer. I got to be honest.
Yeah.
Even though at the end of his career has been a disappointment. I mean, he was on a trajectory to be one of the all-time greats. He's not going to be one of the all-time greats, but he's going to be in that pantheon that should probably be
pretty up there.
Guys, can I just ask you one question, though, about Miggy? And that is this. Do you remember when we were covering Cal Ripken Jr. back in the late 90s? And there was that conversation. Is he hurting the team? Because no one wanted to break the streak. The manager himself at the time said, you know, only Cal can bench himself. I can't make that decision. And yet he was really struggling. But, you know, the streak was all that mattered. But, Baltimore suffered. Have Detroit suffered because they've kept going for Miggy so that he reaches these milestones?
No, really. The thing is, he needs 46 more hits. 45, is it now?
45.
Until he gets 3,000, right? And the Tigers have already said they're willing to keep him on until he gets 3,000. And I don't know.
I mean, he's a replacement level player right now.
He's not. He's
just barely below. His WAR is just below replacement level.
Point four. That's getting down there a little bit.
To me, I think that there are certain intangibles also that that don't fall in the numbers. And that is the leadership quality that he has. You bring him on the field with young players. This isn't a team yet that's contending for a championship. I think the calculus might be a little different if they were on the cusp of potentially going to the postseason. But right now, he's bringing those years of experience to the fore with the other younger players that he has, and is helping them build, and him being on the field, I think, helps for that.
I think that's fair. Also, you know, when you're not having a great season, and I actually think the Tigers are having a season that they'll be happy with at the end of the year. But, you know, when you're in this position, having a player like Miguel Cabrera, who is chasing milestones, is still box office. You know, it probably account for a couple of thousand fans in the ballpark to see Miguel Cabrera, who's been a longstanding Detroit Tigers. So nothing wrong with keeping him around. He's got, like I said, two more very expensive years coming up. Once he gets those 45 hits, then we start getting to, when is the buyout happen?
Yeah, he segues into ambassador status.
Yeah. Let's focus on the positive, guys. Absolute superstar. I'm full agreement with you, JC, first ballot Hall of Famer. And huge congratulations to Miggy tonight, hitting home run number 500. Now, we want to get involved on the Johnny and Josh Show. Big social media, thumbs up and hit those like buttons and mail us and get involved. And the YouTube videos, they're back. Yes, Eric's back. So therefore, the videos are back.
Click, like, Click subscribe.
Yeah, yeah. There's the things down the bottom. There you go. Fantastic. Now. Right, trivia. Has Miggy got anything to do with this week's trivia, Eric?
Well, if I appropriately enough, yes. Yes, he does. Now, Miguel Cabrera, who hit his 500th home run this afternoon, not only that, but he's also hit a home run in 37 different Major League Baseball parks in his career.
Ooh.
So that means longevity and, you know, playing over two leagues kind of thing. But that is not the Major League Baseball record, my friends. Oh, no. So while Miguel has done it in 37 different ballparks, which one of these three players holds record for hitting more home runs in the most different ballparks, right? Is it A, Ken Griffey Jr.? Or is it B, Sammy Sosa? Or is it C, Fred McGriff? Which one of those three players have hit home runs in more Major League Baseball parks than anyone else?
That question. That's a good one, eh?
And it's a very good question. I'm loving that.
Obviously, it's more than 37, right? So it's
That's what the word more means. But the question was great. You slightly ruined it with that line. Anyway, let's move on swiftly. Round number one is, of course, the news roundup. First batter up. Here it is, the news roundup. Okay, well, we're going to kick things off with a revisit to last week's story about the Field of Dreams, moving forward to 2022. And they've made the announcement. They're going with the Cubs and the Reds. I'm sort of with you, JC. I know you felt it was a one-off that worked fantastically, but if they keep going back to the well, it's going to lose its value. You know, I love the fact that it was the White Sox, particularly love the fact that it was the Yankees, that sort of America's team. Not so sure the Cubs, Reds, will it resonate in quite the same way? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, this is not a smart choice. It's a waste of time, effort. The Cubs were one of the two teams that was supposed to come to London. I feel like they're trying to give them like a consolation prize for their willingness to go overseas. And what are you going to do? I mean, you're going to bring out Kevin Costner again to come out and walk up again. It's just, I don't know how you improve, how you shine this up to make it worthy for a second try.
I think it shouldn't. I mean, if you insist on bringing it back, shouldn't it be a Sox home game and maybe bring the Sox? If they want to bring in the Cubs, let them play the Sox. I mean, it's a tough gate to get rid of because, you know, that's a guaranteed sellout when the Cubs and White Sox play. So you don't want to lose it to a small ballpark like they have in Iowa. But I would say if you insist on having this game, it's the White Sox home game for me.
And I will wager that, you know, those great ratings that they were just absolutely going freaky over, they will be nowhere as close this time. It was a fascination, right? It was the carnival came to town once. Second time it comes to town, you're like, meh.
Yeah.
True, but you know what?
I think let's have a game next to a volcano in Hawaii. Let's have a game next to a gulag somewhere in Siberia, something like that.
I'm saying the Sandlot. You pick, you know, go to another movie.
I'm inclined to agree. And to be honest, I don't see that there's any real further point in discussing it. So I'm going to move on swiftly before we hear the bell. Okay. And we're going to talk Joey, because I want to talk about I do love this guy. I love a guy that defies nature. And Joey Votto, who, as we all know, turned 143 last week, has just hit his 2,000th hit. So you've been talking about Miggy as a first-round Hall of Famer. What about Joey Votto? Should we be revisiting that discussion, JC?
Yeah, I don't think he's there yet. He's played 15 seasons. Miggy's at 19, I think. So, you know, if the next four seasons are, he's had a number of really subpar seasons previous to this. He's really picked it up in the second half. If he can build on that for two or three more seasons, perhaps. You look at his jaws, which is one of the metrics where you look at whether or not he's a Hall of Famer. He's not quite there yet. And I just don't see it yet. I love him too. I think he's a fantastic ambassador for the game. I think he's a
lot of black ink
individual.
Josh. A lot of black ink.
I do realize that. And I mean, one thing that we underestimate that he brings to the table is his on-base percentage. The guy knows how to draw a walk. And that's a huge part of the game that I think is often underestimated. But I just don't think he's there yet. I don't think he's there with the counting stats yet. I think he's had some great seasons, but he needs to have a little bit more longevity to improve the counting statistics.
Well, don't forget, mm-hmm. he did hit those milestones in the same season. He got his 300th homer a few weeks ago, and he got his 2,000th base hit this week. But one thing which I know will not get you in the Hall of Fame, but did you hear about this week? And Nick Castellanos, four straight times in the past 2 weeks, he's been hit by a pitch. And then Joey Votto came along and hit a home run right afterwards.
Wow. Because
he bits, because Nick Castellanos bats third, Joey hits fourth. Every time he got hit by a pitch, Votto would hit a home run. So basically the Cardinal rule is, you know, don't piss off Joey.
But you know what I like the most about Joey Votto? His transactions. June 4th, 2002, drafted by the Cincinnati Reds in the second round of the 2002 amateur draft. And that's it. That's pretty cool. That's a long time.
It's a rarity.
I mean, he will get, whether he goes to the Hall of Fame or not, he will have his number retired by the Reds. So
no question.
That's an example where it doesn't matter whether you're in the Hall of Fame or not. But to your point, Eric, you know, 2,000 hits, 300 home runs, that's not 500 home runs.
I agree. I agree. I'm a stickler myself.
It's not, it's not there.
500 to 3,000 is the shoe in, but
Under very nice career. Palmeira. Very nice career.
But I still think he has time to add to his counting numbers. He's not going to get to Miggy. I don't think he's going to get himself into the first ballot slot. But if he has four good years, you know, I think that he could put himself on the cusp.
And I think we are all in agreement that we need more Canadians in the Hall of Fame. There you go. Moving on.
Okay. From a great guy to a not so great guy, Trevor Bauer is back in the news. The restraining order that was applied for has been denied. This was denied on Thursday. And this was his accuser's request to extend a temporary restraining order against the Dodgers pitcher for 5 years. I don't know if you noticed the name of the LA judge that made this decision, Diana Gould Saltman. Told the court
that did you notice that?
Yeah,
yes, I did.
Told the court that Hill had pursued Bauer, not the other way around. She handed down her decision on day four of the hearing, and there's no supporting evidence that Bauer is, in her view, the judge's view, likely to cause harm to Hill or even have contact with her. So therefore, the restraining order was denied. I don't know if this is going to impact at all on the decision by MLB in terms of his immediate future, but they keep knocking back this sort of gardening leave that he's on by a week at a time. Is it going to impact? Are we hearing anything on social media, JC?
You got to understand that denying this restraining order does not speak to culpability for the actions that he took. So I think that maybe in the PR war that, you know, if Bauer and his team yell, look, they didn't even win the restraining order, that some rubes will believe that. It's not really reflective of anything else. I think it hurts Major League Baseball because I think that if the restraining order was put in place, they'd probably feel a little better positioned. But again, the violence is the violence. It doesn't matter who pursued whom. If they determine that it was not consensual, they should still suspend the guy. My big disappointment is that here's this guy, Trevor Bauer, who's all bravado. You know, I speak the truth. You know, I speak my truth, all this sort of stuff. There was this expectation that he was going to speak at this hearing. Now, from a legal standpoint, you never want your client to have to speak in these situations. So I understand legally why they didn't do it. But from his personality and his persona that he presents, he sure as hell should have gotten on that stand. If he's
that never matters in court.
I understand. I just said that, David.
But
my point is that you need to recognize that if you are a bit of a Bauer supporter, which I never was, but I was like, okay, credit to him if he gets up there and talks and goes against that because he believes morally he should do that, but he didn't even do that. And so, you know.
And you know who's the biggest loser in this is obviously the media, who hate Trevor Bauer and were waiting for a decision that was different to pounce.
But this is irrelevant.
They didn't get what they wanted.
But that's for the rubes, Dave. Like this decision has nothing to do with his culpability, whether he unconsensually harmed this woman. It's not quite relevant to that. There's going to be a civil suit. There potentially will be a criminal suit. That's uncertain at this point. A criminal case, excuse me. And if those things happen, you're going to get a much better sense of the reality of this situation.
Okay. I think we can say that the biggest loser in all this is any kid who's bought a Bauer t-shirt or jersey and who say to their parents, mommy, daddy, what did Trevor Bauer do exactly? That's an awkward conversation. That's the awkwardness of this whole situation. And hopefully this is rectified sooner than later. Moving on.
Okay, well, we are going to move on, and we're going to talk about Detroit Tigers export commentator Jack Morris, who has recently come under fire for allegedly mocking an Asian accent during the Tigers-Angels game on Tuesday. The offensive tone was reportedly directed towards Los Angeles superstar Shohei Ohtani. I didn't see this, guys, I'll be brutally honest, although I did see the Twitter outrage that viewers were quick to point out the racist undertone, and certainly Jack Morris decided to issue an apology.
A bad apology.
During the ninth inning, yeah.
So did, what's his name, in Cincinnati?
Well, in the ninth inning, he made like an official statement which read, "It's been brought to my attention. I sincerely apologize if I offended anybody, especially anybody in the Asian community, for what I said about pitching and being careful to Shohei Ohtani. I did not intend for any offensive thing, and I apologize if I did. I certainly respect and have the utmost respect for this guy." So you feel the apology doesn't hit the right note? What's your thoughts on this, boys?
Baseball just bums me out, man. Major League Baseball, it's time that we turn the show and look at minor league baseball and like amateur baseball, because I'm so tired of it. I'm tired of the broadcasters. It's the reflection of a certain type of person who, I mean, I know this happens in all sports. It just seems to happen more in baseball. I don't understand it.
And I'm so sick of these apologies that say, "If I offended anybody." What do you mean, if?
Yeah.
"I sincerely apologize if I offended anybody. It's been brought to my attention." You know, and then the throwaway line at the end, which was, I definitely respect, you know, I definitely respect them walking him there. It would be smart to do. I mean, you know, like, just bad all around. Like Josh said, this is indicative of a certain era, and it's time for this era to just, you know, kind of go away, or just figure out that these things aren't cool. They aren't cool. This isn't Vito Scotty, Gilligan's Island. Vito Scotty, and Eric will know all about that. Eric is shaking his head.
I think one point that David and I have discussed in the past as well is, why do we need former players necessarily to be analysts at all these things? I mean, we feel like we want to bring back our heroes and have them talk about it, and we presume that they understand the game so much better because they played it. I think we've seen a lot that's not necessarily the case. There are people who have not played above Little League who have great insight into the game and are probably a little bit more au courant in the way you need to approach people. And that should be a part of the decision-making as to who gets these jobs.
Well, Jack Morris was a hero of mine, and I was trying to find any way to defend him and defend his apology. I can't. But you know, the thing is, I spoke to a friend of mine in Detroit who said that the Asian community in Detroit are willing to forgive him. They're saying, yes, he should have been suspended, but for him just to walk away would just dust it under the carpet. So hopefully he is back in the booth. We'll see. Moving on.
Okay, baseball card takeover. Now, this isn't a subject that we've covered before, boys. And I understand that the whole baseball card market is an awful lot bigger than I think I've ever appreciated. But they're now saying this is the era of the Topps card, baseball card, is now at an end. JC, can you give us the details?
Yeah, first, let me just put this into some context about the importance of baseball cards for a certain generation, for a couple generations. These were your flashcards to learn about the game. We didn't have the internet. You really didn't get to watch much baseball. And the way you learned about the sport were picking up these wax packs with a piece of gum inside and these little pictures with statistics on the back. And it's what taught me the game. I'm sure David and probably Eric would say the same thing. Yeah. So baseball cards, they're diminishing in their importance because of other ways in which people can engage with the sport. But since the 1950s, there have been a number of companies that have done this, Fleer, Bowman, Upper Deck, but the one constant in the sport was Topps, that had been sort of the primary brand. Well, Topps is getting pushed out. They're getting pushed out by Fanatics, which is this organization that does a lot of memorabilia, other types of sports-related product. And they were able to swoop in and take the licensing rights away, the exclusive licensing rights from Major League Baseball and the Players Association, which means that no other team can either have a player's persona or any of the trademarks. And that really means the Topps is on the outs. There was some discussion previously that Fanatics were going to try and buy Topps, they didn't like the price. So Fanatics went around their back, and it's a really Machiavellian move, because one wonders whether Fanatics now on pennies on the dollar are going to go back to Topps and say, look, you have no choice. Sell to us because we like the value of the Topps brand, but at a much smaller amount because you're screwed otherwise.
Because Topps were looking to do a merger, yeah? They were planning to go public in what's been described as a blank check merger with, was it a company called SPAC? And we're talking multi-millions here. And obviously with the loss of the exclusive rights as a result of what MLB and the Major League Baseball Players Association have agreed with Fanatics Inc., they've now, obviously, that deal has fallen through. So will Topps continue as a card organizer? Are they only baseball, or are they involved in other sports?
Done other sports, and I think they still have one type of licensing left. I think the story you were mentioning, Gouldy, which makes it even more intense, was that Fanatics announced it like the day or 2 days before the IPO, the initial public offering, was supposed to occur. They were going to go public. So they cut them off at the knees before they could even do that. It's crazy. I mean, it's so hardcore.
Because, guys, this merger apparently was supposedly, as a combined entity, was going to be worth $1.16 billion.
Which is crazy when you think that it's only recently that, you know, cards were kind of on the outs for a little while, and now they've had a resurgence. And when you think that Topps would be worth that much. Obviously not anymore.
Scary.
It's a really big bounce, considering, I mean, baseball cards were a mess for a long time. But I think it's disappointing whenever MLB, and obviously this is not just a money grab for Fanatics, it's also a money grab for the union and MLB, because I think, you know, they're all getting in bed with each other, is my understanding.
Topps
only had the exclusivity since 2009. So it is possible to allow different companies to have, you know, rights to the logos and the names if you want to.
But they're not intending to do that because, to your point, David, this deal allows a bigger piece of the pie for the Players Association and for Major League Baseball.
Right.
And I think it's a gross money grab from that standpoint, too, because they didn't really care about the longstanding relationship. They only care about the nostalgia when it suits them, when it drives their value. And when they saw an opportunity to get more ownership, to get more money, they didn't care about Topps. I don't know, but it seems clear that they didn't give Topps an opportunity to come back and give them a shot at this. Instead, they just dove into the pile of money and said, adios.
And we've seen something similar to this before. They did the same, you know, something similar with video games. If you remember, the show used to be available. There were a series of different baseball games that you could buy for Xbox and for PlayStation. And then at some point, MLB and the union got together, pushed out Xbox, and went to one title called The Show and only made it available on Sony, which to me is crazy, because you have large number of video game fanatics who, like me, who I had an Xbox and I love baseball games. And suddenly I'm shut out because I've made an investment in an Xbox from playing a baseball game. So we've seen the union and the league do this kind of before. And they finally have made The Show available on Xbox, but it took about 7 or 8 or 10 years to do.
I think that this is just another reflection of Major League Baseball Players Association putting their focus in the wrong direction, and it's towards money and not towards what makes the game special, which is its connection to history. Topps is one of those connections to history that may be lost or maybe sold to Fanatics, but just another thumbs down. It's been a real negative show.
I agree. And basically, think about the kids like us who bought a pack, a wax pack for 10 cents. How outraged we were that we went up to a quarter. 25 cents for a pack of baseball cards, you still bought it. Now,
I remember walking to school in the snow, I would buy packs of Topps for 7 cents.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
No. Yeah, but they don't give a damn about our nostalgia, boys. We're old and washed up. Absolutely. Moving on. Okay, last item in the news roundup. A view to Akil, our dear friend Akil Baddoo, coming back from concussion. What's the latest, Eric?
So Akil Baddoo has not been playing with the Detroit Tigers. He's been sent down to Toledo to play with the Mudhens on rehab assignment.
I saw what you did there.
So basically what he's done is he's actually went 1-for-10 with 2 walks at doing his rehab assignment.
I guess that's allowed. If you can be sent down as a Rule 5 if it's for rehab.
Exactly. Purposes, and but yeah. Apparently he'll be back in the Tigers uniform at Comerica Park on Tuesday.
He's a feel-good story.
Speaking of rehab.
Oh, is that me?
No, actually, I don't care about your priory stories. I was talking about Josh and his rehab.
Yeah.
How's the knee, John?
It's the calf. I strained my calf. I'm going to physio regularly, doing treatment twice a day. I'm cautiously optimistic. Tomorrow's the first day back on the ice. And if I pass that test, then I'll be going on our first tournament next week.
And what do you mean when you say pass that test? What will they have you do?
Oh, I got to be able to throw and sweep and do all the things I need to do. It's sort of just a physical. It's not like a graded test. It's just whether I physically
sweep.
For those of you who are just joining us, Josh is trying to get onto the U.S. Olympic squad in curling. And no, do not laugh, because we are curling aficionados and we respect the sport. Moving on.
Okay, batter number two.
You couldn't get on the ringette team.
And despite linking, this is a really interesting story. What I think it's fair to say, baseball is the most tradition-bound sport there is in the US, and yet it's now linking with the notorious bad boy of the sports media world, and that is Barstool Sports. And this is a company that's very much centered around gambling on sport, which is becoming massive business in the US. So JC, what's your immediate reaction to this story?
Well, I think that there's been so much negative space about this possibility that I would be surprised if it actually ends up happening. I think the biggest takeaway here, and I know this has been a theme for this episode where we're talking about all the negativity around Major League Baseball, but my big concern here has to do with a deeper connection with gambling. Major League Baseball already has DraftKings as the official sort of, you know, gaming site, but the willingness to find another partner who would potentially broadcast games in a way that's focused towards gambling just brings them down that road even farther. And I think that that's the wrong way to go. I certainly think that if they are going to go that way, Pete Rose needs to get a red carpet into the Hall of Fame, because 100%. there is such unbelievable hypocrisy.
Absolutely. And the rest
that.
Of them.
But the bottom line, Joe Jackson, yeah.
All I mean, of them. Shulis, they Joe, all go in.
It's ridiculous. But I honestly don't like them going that direction. I think it's really dangerous, because gaming is becoming such a large financial behemoth that you're going to get players who are coming up to the major leagues who maybe have been making minor league salaries, and we have prop bets now. I mean, there's so many opportunities to bet on a single pitch that the possibility for people to do things that are wrong here are going to grow and metastasize in a way that's very dangerous for the sport.
You got an MLB kid on his minimum salary. Somebody gives him a call. How'd you like to double your salary this year?
Yeah, because to give them $1 million now, you get a lot for a minimum salary. But if you got a guy just getting called up,
this is a tough one, guys, because particularly in this part of the world, gambling on sport has always been an accepted part of the industry. And yes, there's always a downside to it, clearly, and there needs to be very significant restraints. But there's big money, to be made in terms of the support of grassroots. So, there is a positive side to it, as well as obviously a big negative. What is interesting to me is that obviously the states have been very puritanical in its approach to this. And it's only in the last, 3 years that the federal ban on state authorized sports betting was lifted. And amazingly, that since that decision came down, 24 states in the US have now legalized sports betting. And they're talking about another additional four or so in the next year or so. And apparently the last 5 years, sports gambling in the US has grown 70% in 5 years. 70. I mean, in your words, a behemoth. So there is the obvious positive. So I'm playing devil's advocate here. How do you gander those positives but protect against the negatives?
What is the positive, Goldie? What are you saying?
The funding, because the sponsorship money that you get through the association with gambling organizations, the license fees, et cetera, et cetera.
So the upside is people are getting richer. That's what you're saying. That's the big upside.
Well, the upside is providing a potential income stream that can support the grassroots of any sport.
Let me ask you this. How does gambling help the clubs of the Premier League? What's the slice that the Premier League clubs are getting off gambling from Ladbrokes and Smiths and all those guys?
Well, predominantly through their desire to be associated with them through sponsorship.
But Goldie, you have to understand that the way it works in Europe is different than the US. The US does not fund grassroots sports in the same way, right? Each club who are in the Premier League, they'll have, you know, they'll have their kids programs, all these various programs, and they're going to use that money. That money's going to trickle down and potentially fund that. It doesn't work that way with Major League Baseball. Yes, they have their RBI program. They do some kind of very general cosmetic stuff, but that money's really just going back to line the pockets of the owners to the extent that they have those relationships. And these third parties really could care less about the development of the sport. So I don't see that connection the way you're suggesting there might be one.
Let me stress, guys, I'm playing devil's advocate here. And this is not my opinion that I'm saying. So I'm just trying to get both sides of the argument. Because my understanding as well that Barstool Sports, the deal, is also about TV rights. So therefore, I'm assuming that a part of this is baseball trying to enter into a younger market, because it's always had the reputation of being very conservative to the point of puritanical. And the declining interest in the sport is because we're not getting the kids involved. And perhaps this is their view, that this is one way to address that.
That's very white male audience, by the way.
Yeah. I think that's true that David said, but also, so you're basically saying young people gamble. We should help encourage that gambling. We should, you know, choose an organization that's going to prop up gambling. I think there are many other ways to try and appeal to a younger audience that doesn't require having people wager. And I think if baseball thinks that that's the only way, then we have just such societal problems that we need to just reel it in and figure out another.
I have to tell you, for many years, I found the gambling side of sports in Europe, it's just in bad taste. All these bad gambling companies on shirts. To me, as a guy who grew up not seeing sponsors on shirts, I find it incredibly cheesy and in bad taste to see all these like gambling companies that have popped up in the last 10 years next to a badge that you love and respect as a fan. It's, to me, it's never been a good look, but I think I'm in the minority on that.
Well, and I got to be honest, gambling can be an unhealthy habit. There's a reason why there are disclaimers like, oh, if you have a gambling addiction, please call this number, because a lot of people put themselves in horrific situations through gambling. And for sports to help prop that up, it's fine if other third party companies, you know, if we decide that that's okay and that's part of our society, but for sports to make a decision, I want to get a piece of that and I don't care about that piece of it, and people are only going to watch my games because they have a personal vested interest in life and death, financial life and death for their families, it just doesn't sit right with me.
So in that respect, an extension of that logic is that you would not be happy for any sports team of any sport to be involved with alcohol, unhealthy food, anything that's deemed to be something that is unhealthy and can lead to behavioral problems.
I just don't believe you need to break the seal for another thing. You know, I mean, this is just adding in something that for so long these sports have made a very strong position that they were against. Plus, obviously alcohol, you know, when Mickey Mantle drank, it affected his game. This has a real potential possibility to impact the bottom line and the integrity of the sport. And
I'll tell you right
that
now,
can't be overlooked.
Yeah, I'd feel a lot better about it if they didn't stand on a soapbox for 100 years on gambling. You know, you didn't hear the kind of stuff that, you know, from the NFL and the NBA. But MLB was always gambling, 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 public enemy number one. These guys are on the bad boy list. They're never coming back. No gambling. Remember Willie Mays did a commercial for Harrah's back in like 82, and that was a problem. You know, they never stopped talking about for years about the perils of gambling and having it involved in baseball in any way, shape, or form. And now to embrace it is a bad look.
Well, and you're going to pay the piper. It's just inevitable, Goldie, that at some point there will be scandal. There has been in the NBA, there has been in college sports, there has been in the NFL, and obviously there has been in baseball as well, too. By doing this, it just heightens the likelihood of that occurring.
Okay. And before we move on as well, to the next topic, even when we were on Channel 5 in our glory days, there's one instance, I think, Johnny, when you actually innocently just read out the odds in passing of the World Series. Oh, by the way, I can't remember which year it was, but you said the Mets odds against beating the Yankees in 2000, for example, was 2-1 odds in four games, blah, blah, blah. You made a passing comment the next day we actually got reprimanded by Major League Baseball International. You can't do betting odds on your show. Yeah, but we're in the UK. It doesn't matter. You're not supposed to do any gambling betting odds on your show in England. So please stop mentioning anything about gambling on any Major League Baseball broadcast.
See, that's where I do feel that it's a bit ridiculous, because I distinctly remember that example, Eric, and we were saying that because we were giving, you know, bookies are pretty damn good form readers, and it was just a way of saying that, you know, this is the perception of who's the favorite and who isn't the favorite. We weren't saying go out and put money on it and spend your hard-earned dosh and become a gambling addict. That's not what we were saying. We were using that information. But yeah, I mean, the reaction was a severe one, as you rightly point out, and I agree with Dave 100% that I think there is huge hypocrisy as well, even though I don't necessarily share some of the other viewpoints. But I hate to say it, guys, but it just seems to me that sport is constantly in search of sponsorship, and it's an easy ask. You know, it's really hard to get that sort of money from anybody else right now. So inevitably,
I need to say one last thing, which is I'm a flat out hypocrite, because I actually wrote a column for 2 years for a betting site picking teams. So, you know, I have to admit, you know, I certainly drank from that trough as well too. I don't feel good about it, but I did.
I feel very clean right now next to all of you people.
I thought David and I would be the angels here. Yeah. Moving on.
I'm out of here.
Right, moving on. Batter number three, MLB salaries. They've suggested, and I'm assuming this is all part of the discussions with the MLB PA, the Players Association, the MLB's offer of the luxury tax being raised to $180 million. I'm not sure it's been well received. And it's interesting to make comparisons to salary caps elsewhere in the other North American major sports. NBA salary cap is 112.4, so significantly more than that. The NHL salary cap is 81.5, so over double that. But the NFL salary cap, 208.2 million. So where do we stand on this? Because my understanding of this is that is certainly the Players Association aren't particularly impressed with the initial discussions.
Yeah, well, first off, you didn't mention the huge part of this, which is they also set a floor of 100 million. And that was sort of their misdirect, which is to say, we're going to force teams. And I think there's seven teams that have salary totals under 100 million. And they sort of argued, oh, we're going to force teams up. But don't be fooled by that.
Yeah, they're not going to fall for that one.
Right. The 180 million is a de facto salary cap, and we're seeing most teams basically determining to stay underneath that. So you're creating a range that's increasingly smaller. And I think that the Players Association would rather, they don't care about that floor as much. If teams don't want to be competitive, so be it. They're going to have to deal with it in, you know, public opinion, but they don't want to create any sort of major luxury tax or anything to create the upside, because that's where players really make their big money. So I think the real big takeaway from this isn't going to be the proposal that is even accepted or considered, but I think that what you're looking at here is this is a bad starting point, that if Major League Baseball is trying to throw out something that is so unlikely to get taken, that they're not starting at a place of good faith. And I think that we're in for, you know, girder yourself. We're in for some really tough negotiations.
So Dave, what is going on here then, Dave? I mean, why would MLB make an offer that's considered so derisory that it's actually offensive? Why would they do that? I don't understand what the point of that is, if you want to avoid...
You know, Josh is a little glass half empty there. I think the fact that these guys are talking this early is not necessarily a bad thing, because I think during this stage in negotiations between the union and baseball, they have taken it a little bit farther down the line towards the deadline before getting going in earnest. So I do take some solace in the fact that they are actually sitting across the table from each other and exchanging ideas. Whether or not they're good ones is a different story altogether. Whether or not they're offensive, I don't know if it's offensive. I mean, you know, we have lots of teams that are under 100, you know, what do we have? Seven that are under right now, under 100 million. Obviously the idea that the luxury tax is serving as a de facto cap is not something that the union like, and they will not take this idea forward. But I just feel like it's a place to start, and I'm happy that they started and that they're not starting in December or in November or in October. I think that that's a good sign. Now, having said that, we know that these people hate each other with venom, and that venom has restarted after a kind of like, you know, 15-year peace, which is, keep that in mind, this peace that we've had between the union and baseball is relatively unprecedented, within the last, say, 50 years or so since the union got powerful. So hopefully, this is just the first one, and we'll see some progress, and they will have a deal at some point, but, you know, they're not taking this one, I'll tell you right now.
Josh, help me understand this then. So if they're setting a maximum at 180, and anything over that, you have to pay a luxury tax on. If you look at this season, the LA Dodgers are top of the payroll by some margin, over 267,000. So we're talking 267 million. So we're talking 87 million plus over the maximum. Therefore, they'd be paying tax on that amount. Do you know the numbers? What would therefore be the tax that they would have to pay on that sum of money?
I don't know the exact number, but I know the Dodgers are the exception to the rule, though. They're the one team that's been willing to just blow by it and do whatever it takes. If you look at other teams, there's pretty big separations, my understanding, between the Dodgers and other clubs. Because other clubs are unwilling to do that. Yeah, I mean, it's a competitive advantage if you're willing to spend out the wazoo. It's a de facto luxury, a de facto cap, not an actual cap. But I think that anyone who's sort of tried to do the numbers, the additional money you're making by creating that floor does not outweigh the amount that is lost from the teams that are unwilling to go above that.
Correct.
Right.
Just before you hit the bell, just thing one aside, guys, there's only four teams right now in the major leagues in the standings with a record that's over 600. One of them's Tampa Bay, and they have the 26th largest payroll. 26th. There's only four teams spending less, and yet they're one of four teams with over 600 win rate. I think that is stunning. That says everything you need to know about the Tampa Bay Rays.
Well, that's the thing, because again, I'm going to go back to the kids. Think of the children. A 9-year-old, a 10-year-old kid who's really into baseball saying, "Mommy, Daddy, what's a collective bargaining agreement? Why are millionaires arguing with billionaires?" Hopefully this resolves sooner than later. Moving on.
None of the people, Eric. Right, let's move it on. Seventh inning stretch time, and the boys are now back en masse, which means, of course, that it's the moment for our dear friend, Eric, the producer. Baseball book of the week, big guy. What have you got for us?
This week's Baseball Book of the Week is something called Sleeper Cars and Flannel Uniforms. And now it's the golden age of baseball. Let's say the 30s, because if I were to ask you, what year did any Major League Baseball team board an aircraft to go to a game? Could you be able to give me a year?
I'm going to say 36.
Interesting. Josh, throw in any random year.
Yeah, I'd say later, right after the war, 48.
I'm going 1950.
Well, 1946. The New York Yankees flew to Chicago White Sox.
He always gets it. You always have to be right.
No, he was a spot on.
I was 2 years off. I was right. It was post-war. I knew it was.
Correct.
That was a disaster.
Yeah, you were embarrassing.
So basically, the New York Yankees on May 6, 1946, boarded United Airlines aircraft to fly to Chicago to play the White Sox. First Major League Baseball team to do that. But prior to that, it was all about sleeper cars and wearing flannel uniforms. And even in a 154-game schedule, you had to allow for travel days, and New York to Chicago took 20 to 24 hours on a train because it had a lot of stops. But it's written by Eldon Auker, who exactly not a very prolific player in his time, but hey, this guy, he wrote a memoir about striking out Babe Ruth, about pitching to Joe DiMaggio. He was in that cusping era when he played for the Detroit Tigers, when he played for the Boston Red Sox, played for the St. Louis Browns, of what it was like traveling on sleeper cars and wearing flannel uniforms. Yes, flannel uniforms, not polyester. And how different it was, imagine just, being a fly on a wall of a sleeper car and hearing baseball players, Joe DiMaggio, Babe Ruth, whoever, just waxing lyrical about, you know.
And they all talk poker. Like this, like, hey, babe, how you doing?
Exactly, like a newsreel announcer. Right. But it's my recommendation. One of my favorite bits about it is that he was interviewed in 1935 by some, Eldon Ocker, that is, after he won the 1935 World Series with the Detroit Tigers. He is interviewed by some radio analyst who was very nervous at first and goes, hi, can I interview you? And this radio reporter is very nervous and interviewing Eldon Ocker about what it was like World Series. A few years later, that radio analyst went up to Eldon Ocker and said, I don't know if you remember me, 1935, but you took care of me. You've actually, thank you for that interview. I was a young rookie kid working in radio, and now I'm the president of the United States of America. It was Ronald Reagan.
No,
and what? Let's go play golf. Wow. So this story about him, being interviewed by Ronald Reagan, then playing golf with Ronald Reagan when he was president. Nice. And that's my baseball book of the week. There you go. What's next?
Cultural reference.
Culture. How about baseball and pop culture? Now, Johnny's absolutely been loving the music I've been supplying past few games. the feedback for last week's disco tune, which I agree was terrible and horrific, but it was so bad it was good. Or was it just so bad it was bad? But this week, I'm going to... okay, hear me out here. Well, this is because it is a family show. You know, when let's talk about intercourse, shall we? Because in the vernacular, and I think even on this side, when you're in school and you know you're dating a girl or you're dating a guy, whatever floats your boat, and he said, did you get to first base or did you get a second base with her? Girls say, did you get a third? We got the third base together. So you can see how I'm going with this because
meatloaf.
No, we can't.
It's meatloaf, Phil Rizzuto. I know where you're going.
Male meatloaf. So yeah, basically, if I were to ask you as well, Thriller by Michael Jackson was the number one all-time selling album. Number two was AC/DC, Back in Black, and number three was Meatloaf, Bad Outta Hell.
Is that right?
And on that album was Paradise by the Dashboard. Some people say it's misogynist. Some people say, no, actually, it's not misogynist because she says, stop right there. You know, you can't go past third base. And within the song is this little excerpt with Phil Rizzuto. Remember this song, guys? You remember this? You know, did any of you own this album?
Phil Rizzuto said that he got duped into doing this.
Yeah, now apparently Phil Rizzuto said he didn't realize it was about intercourse and trying to get to home plate. And that getting home means sex.
Phil would never be involved with that. He would only do loan commercials.
But apparently Meatloaf says he knew what he was getting himself into. He was warned beforehand. Phil Rizzuto said, oh, I didn't know. I didn't know anything. Strategically, it's wrong. That the lyrics are wrong because to get to home plate, seal the deal, the lyrics say, it's a squeeze play, there's a squeeze play and he gets home. You would never do a squeeze play with two outs. So that's why, so it doesn't make a
lot of sense. You say that, but... Who saw the movie Major League? That's exactly what he does.
Oh, cute.
He beats it out at first base. Tom Berenger beats out first base, right? That was a I agree with you. Yeah,
but this is a cultural reference within a cultural reference. I like this.
So on the basis of that, Josh, because you hate baseball movies where the baseball's not good enough and realistic and authentic, therefore you must have hated this song because it wasn't authentic baseball talk.
You misunderstand my concern with baseball movies under that paradigm. My issue is when the people playing don't look like they know what they're doing.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, it's when they don't know how to throw a baseball or the swing just looks really wrong.
Now, so the thing is, I love the album as well, despite its controversial, is it misogynist? Is it not? But I just can't stand the guy. I don't believe in his, I think he's gone off the rails as far as politics. I don't agree with his politics. I don't agree with other stuff he said controversially.
Let's cue the waffle.
Let's ask exactly.
Well, cut
meatloaf. I had another meatloaf story, but I'm gonna let it go because it's time for the trivia answer. Hopefully, you've been cogitating in your mind when I asked you that Miguel Cabrera. He is hit a home run in 37 different ballparks, but the record is held by whom for hitting a home run in the most different Major League Baseball ballparks? Was it A, Ken Griffey Jr.? Was it B, Sammy Sosa? Or is it C, Fred McGriff, the crime dog?
Okay, can I go first, guys?
Let Johnny go first.
I'm applying some logic here that obviously to have played in all those different stadiums, it must be a player that had a lengthy career and played in both leagues. It's not just interleague wouldn't do it. They need to have played in both leagues. So first, I know all three of them did. All three of them did. So that's the first thing, obviously. But looking at the three, and you know, and I appreciate that Fred went all over the place. You know, although I think of him as a Brave, you know, I know he was at the Braves, he was at the Rays and the Jays and the Padres, etc. And obviously, Sammy, you think of as a Cub, but I know also he was with the White Sox and the Rangers. But the one that to me had the longest sort of extensive period was Ken Griffey Jr., obviously with the Mariners for 10 years, then with the Reds for, I think it was 8 or 9 years. So given that, I think his career was more evenly split between the American League and the National League. So I'm going on that basis, that logic, with Ken Griffey Jr.
All right. David Lingell.
I'm going to go with McGriff. I also think when he was playing, there were a lot of old parks around and some new ones coming online. So I'm going to go with him.
Josh
and I
Taylor.
Did that in a much shorter way than Johnny did, by the way. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah, I mean, McGriff's career started a little earlier. I feel like it would either be Griffey or Sosa, but I'm going to go Sosa. He hit the most amount of home runs of the three of them, so I'm going Sosa.
Right. I don't think he did.
In no particular order, Fred McGriff hit 43 different ballparks.
It's a lot.
Okay. Ken Griffey Jr. hit in 44 different ballparks. All right, so now and Sammy Sosa hit in 45 different ballparks.
Wow. And he did. He hit Sosa hit 609 home runs.
Yeah, so more than
that. Yeah.
There you go.
Sosa I'm surprised about that. Actually, Sosa hit. He only had a cup of coffee with the Rangers and the Whites. I mean, he was with the Cubs forever.
Ken Griffey Jr. hit 630.
Oh, well, there you go. Well,
so he hit more home runs than Sammy Sosa, which was another reason why I went with Ken Griffey Jr. Wow. And therefore, Sammy on that basis, I get a point for knowing that. And more importantly,
that was not the question asked. So moving on.
Right. Time for the mailbag. And we've had some good ones this week, guys. I'm going to start off with Roger Whiteside. Thank you for this, Roger. He asked, shouldn't the number one team always play the team with the least successful regular season record? And obviously the reason Roger is picking up on this is if the Giants continue their success and end up winning the NL West, the likelihood is they will play the winner of the wild card, which almost inevitably is going to be between the Dodgers and the Padres. And we would expect the Dodgers to win that matchup, most likely. And as we all know, they're pretty much the best team in baseball. So they're at a disadvantage because of the rules. Should they, when they get to that stage of last four teams in the playoffs, should the number one seed not be playing the team with the worst record rather than the wild card? What's your thoughts, boys?
No, yeah. I think it's fine.
Yeah, I agree. Sure. Let's go for it. Well, I'll call up Mr. Manfred and I'll let him know.
We changed the rule because the rules are, as it stands, he's right. They're going to play the Dodgers, yeah. Assuming the Dodgers beat the Padres. So they are going to beat the number one seed plays the one. And I suppose, to be fair, this is a rare season where that's going to happen. For the most part, the wild card winner would not be a team like the Dodgers with a really good record, with a significantly better record.
It happens from time to time. It's not a big deal. You want to win the World Series, you should be able to beat anybody. So.
Guys, I'm getting really excited that the Braves, despite all their problems, may end up in the championship series just simply because they can avoid the Giants and can avoid the Padres and they avoid the Dodgers.
Or avoid the Cincinnati Reds. Thank you very much. You also won today.
Thank you.
I don't forget, I called it a few weeks ago.
Somebody with the courage to call that out.
I said, look out for those Reds.
Well, you not only said that, but on the back of Joey Votto, and you're absolutely right. It is on
Thank
the back
you very
of Joey
much.
Votto. You know your stuff, big guy, unlike my other co-presenters. Let's move it on. We have an email from, not an email, I'm afraid. We have a Twitter from, and I'm going to try and say
it's called,
this.
It's called a tweet.
A tweet, thank you.
Yeah, no
well, if you could tell me how to pronounce this, it's Toboboli, I think.
Toboli? Topoff.
No, because it's T-O-B-O-B-O-L-Y. You tell me. Toboboli. There you go. Toboboli. Love it. Question. Barry Bonds is coming up for his last chance at the Hall of Fame. His percentage rises every time. He can't surely get in, can he? We've already mentioned, I think, Roger Clemens is coming up for his last possible vote in, and he's in the same situation. His percentage keeps... Well, what is the percentage, JC? What percentage do you have to get of the votes to be...
It's over 75%.
It's over 75. Right. Well, I think both Clemens and Bonds were over 70 last time, if my memory serves me right. So they are getting closer and closer, but this is their last chance, isn't it?
I mean, I've said this before. I've always been a little bit on one side of this. I don't like Bonds. I don't like Roger Clemens, but you have to judge players in the context of their era. They were dominant players compared to other players who had the same opportunity. And to me, they're Hall of Famers. They're two of the greatest players ever. Would they have been as great if, you know, allegedly they did the things they did? Probably not, but I still think they would have been Hall of Famers.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that they both would have been Hall of Famers. And I agree with you 100%. And obviously it is allegedly, we don't know for sure, but they have been tainted. I agree with you. I think they should both be in the Hall of Fame. But I'm actually quite glad that they've had to wait. I actually think that sort of, that says something. There's a statement there that, you know, not exactly happy about this. You clearly deserve to be in, but we want you to know that we weren't happy about the decisions you took. Another tweet from Aiden Wiley. Hi, chaps. Got a question for next week's show. Like the phrase, it's un-American, the nebulous term built for the playoffs seems to be echoed, but never defined. Can you explain how built for the playoffs is different from built for the regular season? JC, I'm assuring this is your world.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with pitching. So it's a situation during the regular season, you have a five-man rotation. You need to have a lot more consistency up and down that rotation in order to be successful. You need a lot of depth in your bullpen during the regular season because players get tired and so forth. And you need depth offensively. When you get to the playoffs, you can cut it down to a three-man, maybe four-man, depending on the situation, rotation. You can lean a little heavier on certain relievers. So it's about the top of your team being more available to perform than having that depth necessarily. The reality of the postseason, though, is that a lot of it has to do with players getting hot at the right time. There's just so much uncertainty about it. But at the same time, I think that that's what that concept is. It's, you know, having those three starters who are so dominant above and beyond the rest.
Postseason is about quality, not quantity. I've often wondered whether we should apply the same attitude towards this podcast, but that's another story for another occasion. Thank you for all our questions. Great questions this week. If you want to get in touch, don't forget the Twitter handle at Johnny and Josh, or of course you can join us on Facebook, which is the Johnny and Josh Show. We'd love you just to join in that community anyway. So do get involved. And in particular, do of course hit the like button and subscribe and do all those social media things that I don't really.
Exactly. And on YouTube, don't forget YouTube's back.
Yeah.
Our YouTube channel. There's a bell down if you're looking. There's a bell. If you click on that bell, you get a notification saying, bing, new episode is out.
Is that right? Yes. How exciting.
That's on YouTube, right?
So, is that what the kids are doing?
If you want to look at our ugly faces on YouTube, you click that bell on YouTube. Otherwise, just follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, and then make sure you subscribe and everything.
Can I come clean here, guys? Every show this season, which is what, 20 episodes before today, I've had a shave. I've presented myself thinking we're on YouTube, people are going to, and then we haven't been. So today, first time, I'm unshaven. And now you're telling me we're on YouTube.
And you look disgusting.
Yeah. Thank you, David. do get involved with our other shows, of course, on the Ted Fred Stable. If you're into fantasy baseball, I hope you'll join me and James Holden on Behind Home Plate at BHP Pod. Best seat in the house if fantasy baseball is your thing. There is also the Nat Coombs Show. That's at the NC Show. Do check it out. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, all your favorite social media. What do we call them? Handles? Mediums?
I don't know.
What do you call them? That'll do. Okay. Boys, what do we got to look forward to this week? What are you up to?
Actually, I'm off to Slovakia this week.
Wow. For work?
So I might not be here next week. If I do, I'll do it from Slovakia while eating some borscht or some goulash.
That's amazing. Fantastic. We wish you the very best, and fingers crossed you will be back in time. Boys, obviously you're focusing on the curling, JC, and on the fitness and the rehab.
Yeah, if you'll know it went well if I'm not here next week, because my team is going to Minnesota to play in a warm-up tournament for the pre-Olympic qualifier. It's the U.S. Open of curling contenders. So if I'm healthy, I'm playing in that next weekend.
So basically, when I asked this question, I wasn't expecting confirmation that, Dave, it's just going to be you and me next Sunday.
We'll see. I'm in the Pilates World Championships. I don't know if you guys know that. I'm qualified for the Pilates World Championship, so I don't know if I could be here.
That's probably the closest you've come to being good at sport right there, Dave. So
I play real sports, not trying to be the best at exercise. One man on a famous TV show.
Well, guys and girls out there, all our listeners to the Johnny and Josh show, it could just be me next week talking on my own. I guarantee it'll be the longest episode of the series. Thank you for joining us. Thank you to Big Dave. Thank you to JC. Thank you to Eric. You're all my baseball brothers. I love you loads. Take good care of yourselves, everybody. Look forward, hopefully, to having your company next week on the Johnny and Josh show.